we've learned so far that one's desires and ambitions develop according to the company one keeps. One is therefore advised to avoid non-devotees and to associate with devotees. Now text 4 explains what association consists of. It gives us some idea how to associate with devotees. And that will be further explained in texts 5 and 6. Dadati pratigrinati guhyama kyati prajtati bhunkte bhojayate chaiva shadvidham priti lakshana. These are priti lakshana, symptoms of loving dealings. And Srila Prabhupada explains that these dealings are found even in the materialistic society. And he gives the example that we get together with some business friend, so we invite him to lunch, and there's some exchange that way, and maybe we give him some gift, and then we talk business. What do you think about this? What do you think about that? Well, maybe we could work together. Mm-hmm. Even in the business world, these things are there. Or in romantic affairs. So he buys a gift for her, and she gives something to him, and she cooks for him, or he takes her out to a restaurant, and they disclose their minds to one another, and then it's all over. So Prabhupada talks about these six loving exchanges between devotees, and he speaks of a give and take policy that we exchange with the people who come in touch with the society. We give them whatever we can in the form of some contribution of Krishna consciousness, and they reciprocate in their, according to their feeling and their ability. Especially we can see Prabhupada speaking here in the context of his Indian preaching and life membership activities. Srila Prabhupada conceived of life membership as being a way to increase loving dealings between the members of the society and the life members and so on. Sometimes it was conceived by neophyte devotees as being just a way to collect money. But that's not what Prabhupada's vision was. Of course, definitely he had in mind that this would be a good source of income for Krishna conscious activities. But he also had in mind that it would be a good way to benefit the people who would become our life members. That was Prabhupada's idea, that they should come in touch with the society. This was an avenue in. They would probably not join the kirtan party on the street or participate in some other ways. But this was a very suitable way that they could get involved with the activities of the society and be drawn in by loving reciprocations. Prabhupada would accept invitations from the life members for taking prasadam, and in fact he would refuse invitations unless they were life members or became life members. And he would look for different ways to give them books so that they would get transcendental knowledge, give them opportunities for taking part and advancing in Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada speaks about that here, how the life members and friends come and they accept whatever prasadam we can give, even if they're coming from the higher sections of society, still they come and they take a little prasad. And we talk to them about what we're doing in devotional service and what they might do in devotional service. We hear from them about their own concerns. In this way, there's reciprocation. Now, let's see. Prabhupada points out that on this Dadati platform, the Dadati means giving. To give something, give some gift. And Prabhupada points out that the greatest gift is the holy name. The greatest gift is the holy name. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was giving it out freely, even to the animals he was giving the holy name and inducing them to chant. But at least we can try to get the human beings chanting and dancing. The Prabhupada points out that in this Dadati principle, one should give 50% of one's income for the service of the Lord and his devotees. Is that here? I think so. At the very end, right? So that's also part of the Dadati. Prabhupada had no small time Dadati in mind. But rather, following the example of Rupa Goswami, practically in every one of Prabhupada's books, this principle is mentioned. One should give 50% of one's income. And prati grinnati, to accept. Prati means in reciprocation. One should accept what has been given. One should accept the holy name of the Lord. One should accept whatever is given by a devotee. And guyam akhyati prichati, confidential discussions. Prabhupada explains, an experienced devotee explains, and an inexperienced devotee learns from him. This is Dadati Prabhupada. This is guyam akhyati prichati. And punkte bojayate chaiva, we should invite devotees to our home and offer them prasad and be prepared to please them in all respects. Especially this is the duty of the householders. The householders are generally considered to be entangled in material affairs because they're in business or working, they have their family concerns, the children and the relatives and so many different things. Family life means naturally one has to be involved in so many material things. Brahmachari sannyasi doesn't have to be so concerned about money, about maintaining a household, any of these things. But for a householder, these things are there, and it can be quite a weighty burden on the householder, and their spiritual life may be impeded or slowed down. So this is an opportunity for the householders to invite the devotees and give them prasada. That in the Srimad Bhagavatam it's mentioned that one should engage one's wife for the benefit of others. If one thinks that now I have this wife and how can I engage, what can I have her do for me next? That's not actually the right idea. The wife should be engaged in the service of Krishna and in the service of others. So the wife can be cooking and devotees are invited. In fact, it's mentioned the householder, before he takes his opulent prasadam or whatever prasadam, he should call out three times on the road, if anyone's hungry, please come and take. And if someone comes, he feeds that person. If no one comes, then he eats. Otherwise, after the guests, he'll take. That means it's not just all about me, but engaged in the service of others also. That's the duty of the householder. The householders have to maintain the sannyasis, the householders have to maintain the brahmacharis, householders have to maintain the vanaprastas. Three sections are dependent on the one section, or are to live at the expense of the one section. That's the cost of the license. And the brahmacharis or sannyasis or vanaprastas who accept the invitation, it's considered that because they're taking prasadam, through them the Lord is being pleased, and they should give some spiritual knowledge. They should have some chanting of the holy name. They should speak something about Krishna, so that the householders will be encouraged in Krishna consciousness. Of course, sometimes the householders are more advanced than the brahmacharis or even than the sannyasis. But still, even within their advanced position, they will perform this function to invite different devotees. Prabhupada's father, Prabhupada, said every day he was inviting some sadhus, two, three, some, never just cooking and eating, always inviting some sadhus to come take prasadam and seek their blessings, that my boy may become a servant of Srimati Radharani. Prabhupada was, his father was engaged like that. So this is the idea. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would come to some place, some town, a village, then the different devotees would take turns inviting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you please come take it my own, you please come take it my own. Generally that's the system. Some sannyasi comes, people will extend, different householders will extend invitations to get the benefit of that association. And the sannyasi takes it as his duty to give some spiritual knowledge. It's not simply a banquet circuit that the sannyasi, okay, where are we going to tank up today? Where's the feast today? But it's meant for give and take, some spiritual exchange, some confidential questions the householders may have, some questions, or the sannyasi may have some idea in his mind, and there's some discussion in relationship to Krishna. This is the idea. Are there any questions so far?
The income, every month you should give 50%?
Every month? No, you can give annually. Quarterly, annually, doesn't, there's no particular, just so it comes out to 50.
When you retire, then you give.
Well, that's your idea? Whatever's left at the very end? Got 10 rupees left, you can have 5. I don't think that seems to be what Prabhupada's promoting. Yes? Loud, please.
This could be the situation a day after our family, when you have used all the need for the family, then what left?
No, that's not what's indicated. That's, what is that called? There's a, the not that he gives 50% of the remainder after he spent everything on his family. Then the 10 cents that's left gets divided. No, actually the indication seems to be in all of Prabhupada's books that he should actually live on 50% of his income. How about that? Which means that the householder should live a little modestly. Because this is also, Prabhupada points out someplace, this is how the income of the householder becomes purified. Yajna dana tapas chaiva pavanani manishina. The Bhagavad Gita said even the great souls are purified by sacrifice, by austerity, and by charity. So this is both austerity and charity, to purify that income by parting with some good portion of it, and to live a little austerely by living with less. This seems to be what Srila Prabhupada is indicating everywhere. Otherwise it's no big deal, you know, whatever you might happen to have left at the end of the day, distribute it. No, that's, you know, at the end of the year or at the end of your life.
Mm-hmm. And Srila Prabhupada, actually, especially in the first part of the purpose, quite often uses the word law, like pretty or...
No, on this topic, is there more? This 50% thing. And one time, there's a letter Prabhupada wrote to one devotee, he said, give what you can. Yeah, give everything if you can. But no, Prabhupada wrote, some devotee evidently wrote to Srila Prabhupada, Jia, you know, I couldn't live on 50%, I can't give 50%. Prabhupada, give what you can. It's not impractical that, you know, you try to, you know, your wife and children have to be in rags, and, you know, I'm sorry, we can't afford shoes because we have to give 50%. But the idea is like that. There, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had one disciple, Professor Sanya, and he was running the editorial department, if I remember, publications department. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to supply something because they were engaged in the press affairs. He was a householder. So, but this Professor Sanyal would practically not ask anything, or, you know, very reluctantly take anything. I think somehow Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was supplying to his wife, or his wife was sometimes... Anyway, the idea is that he was so reluctant that we're living at the expense of Guru Maharaj. We shouldn't take... Not that we should live an opulent householder life at the expense of Guru Maharaj. They were taking very, very less. Very, very less. So, householder life is also meant for austerity. Pavanani Manishina. It's not only sannyasis and brahmacharyas and vanaprasthas who are supposed to be austere. But householder life becomes purified by austerity. The austerity may be less. The austerity may not be as severe as in brahmacharya life or sannyas life. There's some concession given, but not that, well, I'm a householder, austerity is not for me. Austerity is for everyone. It's especially for the sannyasis, for the brahmacharis. But it's for everyone, it's purifying for everyone. So, not that one starves, but the householder should think that actually it's my duty to give. And they should give as they can. And Prabhupada's number that keeps coming up is 50%. Yes?
Often said that Krishna gives much more back than the giving.
That's also there, but it's not a business deal with, you know, I'll give $100 and wait for $200 to come back. Although it's true, it's money in the bank. Giving charity means that it seems like you're losing, but actually you're gaining, because you have credit, either eternal credit or karmakandhi activities, at least you have karmic credit.
Sometimes there is the problem that devotees who give the money, they don't have faith that with this money we will be operating.
You give the money, you don't have faith that it'll be, so give it where you have faith. It's not that you know, have to give it even to your local temple. You think your local temple's mismanaged, the president's embezzling, the pujari's, you know, driving a Ferrari.
Yeah.
You know, send it to Mayapur, send it to Vrindavan, send it, give to Prabhupada Samadhi, give for BBT, for book publication. Print Arabic books, print French books, print German books, print Italian books, print Chinese books, print Brihad Bhagavatamrita, new books, new English books. There's so many, just in publishing, help the website. There's so many different things you could give for just in BBT. Then there's so many ISKCON centers. Yeah. New York, Los Angeles, Paris, France. Germany needs help. Germany's on a recovery program. They need help. Paris is looking up at Germany. You know, there's so many places where you can give your money. And actually it's like that particularly the Indian community tend to be very attentive in business, and they'll see very carefully how the money is being spent. Are these people giving receipts? Are these people publishing their accounts? Do we know where is the money being properly accounted for? How much do they spend for this? How much do they spend for that? They'll see. And that's very good, because it means that the temple has to be well managed. Otherwise people think they'll give, but they'll give something. They'll give something, you know, a little token. But if they see it's well managed, it's being, the money is accounted for, it's being spent very intelligently, they're very parsimonious with the money, they're very frugal, they don't misspend, then they'll think this is great, and they'll give more. Because actually people want to give. We think people don't want to give, everybody's stingy, nobody's generous, they're all tight. Actually people want to give. They want to give because they want to feel good, they want to do good work, but they don't have time. They're in their business life, they're in their family life, they have, you know, they don't have time to go out and distribute literature on every street corner and distribute prasadam and worship the deity and do all of these, the whole festivals. They can't do all of these things. So if someone is doing it and they can participate by sponsoring it, by paying, they'll be very happy. If the money is nicely spent. Then they'll be very happy that I gave my money and this is what happened. Then they feel satisfaction. And when you feel satisfaction, you want to give more money. You have a good experience, you want to have it again. So when your temples are nicely managed, when the donors are appreciated, when the money is accounted for, when it's properly spent, money will be there. People will like to give. That's a fact. It's not that people don't want to give. They do want to give. But they don't want to give to a black hole. They don't want to give to the ozone. They want to give for some cause by which they'll feel, yes, my money has done something good. My money has done something good. This becomes a fundraising seminar. That's another thing, but that's a fact.
Whereas on the other side, sometimes we hear ISKCON should be aware of not selling out to the Indians.
No, you don't have to, Indian or anyone else. It's not that you have to do what the world wants you to do. It's not that because the donor thinks that you should start an eye hospital, or the donor thinks you should start, you know, a birth control clinic, or the donor thinks, you know, this or that, then why not have a deity of Shiva? You know, and I'm ready to give $5,000 for the, you know, for the deity and for the monthly worship and everything. It's not that wherever there's money we have to go. That's not what we have to do. We have to do our duty. It's not that to satisfy the donors, whatever a donor is willing to give for, we have to do. We simply have to say, this is what we do. Of course, it can be presented attractively, it can be presented in a nice light, but we have something that we're supposed to do. We have some mission to accomplish. We have books to publish, that's education. We have temples and worship. We have distribution of prasadam in all of our temples. We have festivals, we have training of priests. We have outreach programs. We have school programs. We have so many publication programs, we have so many programs. And we can present to our friends and members and community, here are the things that we do. And there will be those who will say, oh, this is very good. Not that we have to be at all things to all people. Then people look at you and say, you know, they don't stand for anything. They're a hodgepodge. Or even if people say that you're great and throw money at you hand over foot, that's nice, now you have a lot of money, but you have no principles anymore. You don't stand for anything. You're just, you know, a prostitute. Somebody gives you money, you try to make them happy. That's the business of a prostitute. Whatever makes them happy, he gives money, you do that. That's not our business. We have our actual duties to perform, and we present to our, you know, this is Bhuyam Akyati Prichchati. Swamiji, what can I do for you? You say, oh, we have a temple that we're building here, or we want to distribute prasadam in the prasadam pavilion to 10,000 people. We want to have a Janmashtami celebration. We want to publish books. We want to go to all the schools in the state and give them Krishna consciousness. We have so many programs. What would you like to do? Oh, you could sponsor this, you could sponsor that. But not that just wherever there's a sponsor, we'll do any damn thing. Prabhupada rejected many such offers. There's a story, where was it? Velur or Nellore or someplace like that south. And they were offering a temple, land and a temple. But Prabhupada saw what kind of thing they were doing, that it was all hodgepodge. He saw the tulsis. Black tulsi, green tulsi. That means Rama, Krishna, Rama, Krishna, Rama, Krishna, Rama, Krishna. And he understood, these are hodgepodge people. They're hodgepodge people. And they just want us to build a temple for them. With their idea of worship, they'll have the land, and on their land now they'll have a temple. We'll be the staff. We'll provide the staff. But it will all be for their own objectives and not for the actual objectives of the society or preaching Krishna consciousness. It will just be for their own personal satisfaction. And contaminated, compromised. Prabhupada rejected many such offers. Many such offers. Not that simply, you know.
If I'm giving Rashtra to the temple and I know the history of this management and Pujari, Jari, Parari, and all of these things, I'm aware of that. Do I still continue giving? Is it still considered devotional service? Or do I get reaction because I have knowledge of the investment? And there's nothing much I can do to try to.
Well, it's up to you. The usual thing I see when money is mismanaged and someone goes for a donation, they'll give a little token something. They'll never say no. They'll say yes, yes. And they'll give, you know, if they could give 100,000 rupees, they'll give 100 rupees. They won't send you away open hand and empty handed. They'll give you 100 rupees, 101 rupees. And thank Swamiji, thank you so much for coming. Because they know, why am I going to give money to these flaky people to misspend it? They'll give a little something.
reaction?
Reaction? We're not recommended to give where we know money is being used for the wrong purposes. We're not recommended to do that. That's in Bhagavad Gita, charity given to unsuitable persons is in the mode of ignorance, right? Charity should be given to at a suitable time, a suitable place, to suitable persons. Who's a suitable person? Not the person who's going to take my money and spend it on, you know, his family maintenance in the name of the temple. He's not a suitable person. Suitable person is the person who's actually following the principles, actually using the money for the right cause. That's charity in the mode of goodness. So if we want to get money, we should be the right persons. Not persons who are simply after money, but persons who are actually trying to do Krishna's work, so that when we approach people and say, could you give? We can honestly say what it's for, how it's being spent, how it's accounted for, everything. And then people will see, yes, this is good. You can't cheat and get away with it. Maybe once, twice, maybe for some time. I had an English, this is very sage advice. I had a English teacher back in junior high school or high school. And very nice man, extremely nice. And of course, being kids, we all used to goof off in his class, and you know, the kids would throw spitballs or, you know, whatever they would do, they would mess around. And he told us, he said, you know, you're goofing off now and you think that you can play and get away with it, but the test is going to come. He said, and I've told you this many times and I'm telling you again, and you'll always remember it. It all comes out in the wash. English expression. It means that sooner or later the truth comes out. It all comes out in the wash. He was right. It's true, and I've always remembered it. You can get away with your monkey business for some time. Sooner or later the truth comes out. So better that the truth be good. Let that truth come out, that yes, they stick by their principles. Giriraj Maharaj tells a story that he was preaching to some man, and the man was somehow or other, he was like, whatever Giriraj Maharaj would say, the man would come back with some sort of Mayavadi philosophy and try to, you know, get Giriraj Maharaj to agree to, you know, his Mayavadi ideas. And Giriraj Maharaj, you know, the man was rich, but Giriraj Maharaj was sticking to his principles and he wouldn't compromise. Finally, the man took him in the back and showed him his Radha Krishna deities. And because he'd stuck by his principles, gave him a very nice contribution. Just testing. Prabhupada said, my Guru Maharaj never compromised. I never compromise, nor should any of my disciples ever compromise. It's not that we can be purchased. You give enough money and I'll sell out. Better to be poor and right. Better to be poor and Krishna conscious than loaded down with money and sold out. We don't need money. Krishna is our financier. Sannyasi actually asks for money to benefit the people. They'll benefit by giving, not that because he's in need of money. Prabhupada gave some story, told some story. There was some sannyasi going around begging alms. And some householder said, oh, there's some sannyasi, some beggar. Give him some ashes. And the sannyasi said, yes, give me some ashes, but let your charity begin. Sannyasi should not be in the business of going around to collect for his own happiness. His business is to benefit the people to whom he... It's an excuse. He comes in the role of a beggar. Actually, he's giving the most valuable thing, but for his own benefit and the benefit of others, he takes the role of a beggar. Please give something. And then on that excuse, he gives more to them than they give to him. That should be the idea. Not that we're simply taking, taking. We have to give. The dati, that's the first thing we should give. And pratigrinati. Naturally, if you give, people will want to reciprocate. We should accept. But not that we're... Because we're so eager to get, we'll have nothing real to give anymore. That we shouldn't do. Yes?
What about the situation of Mukta Bhagavati Charitamrita?
Which one? Which one?
Mukta Bhagavati Charitamrita.
Book table?
Book table.
Book table, Jayate Chaiva.
Distribute the prasadam and receive prasadam like in Western temple. Sometimes we have tradition that temples collect fee for some fee. Should the prasadam be collect?
Well, I'm not going to give a big, you know, Supreme Court judgment about whether you should collect money for the Sunday feast. In some temples it's a very good idea, because that way they get human beings for the Sunday feast. You know, we've seen some temples, they don't charge anything, it's all free, and they get, you know, all the people who haven't bathed in 7 weeks, and no respectable person will come. And then if they charge, you know, a dollar or something, all of a sudden, you know, you get nice people. The smelly feet crowd goes someplace else. So not that it's a business, but the thing has to be considered according to the local circumstances. Not that if you don't have money you can't get prasadam. That's also there. So everyone should get something. Just Tirupati temple, Prabhupada liked their management very much. There's big prasadam buildings. You go in one, there's like floors dedicated to free prasadam distribution. Anyone who comes to see the deity, they get a little ticket or something, and they can go and they take full, sit down, full prasadam. Rice and you know, very nice. Sumptuous. Nice, simple but very nice. And then you go up, like the next floor is up, and if you're prepared to pay something, you'll get, you know, really opulent. You know, for those who pay, you get, you know, opulent. And for those who are not paying, simple and nice. They have those ladus, famous Tirupati ladus. Everybody gets a little Tirupati ladu. Everyone receives the deed. And if you have money you want to give, you can get, you know, the mega. But nobody, no, I'm sorry, you didn't give any money, you can't have any prasad. Everyone gets something. That should be there. Prabhupada used to make it a point that in any engagement, there must be prasadam distributed. Mantrahinam adakshanam. What is that? Vidihinam ashrishtanam mantrahinam adakshanam. This is yajna in the mode of ignorance. There's vidihinam. No, the rules and regulations aren't followed. Ashrishtanam. No prasadam distribution. Mantrahinam. No mantras properly chanted. And adakshanam. No contribution to the priests. This is sacrifice in the mode of ignorance. There, whenever we do Sankirtan Yajna, there ought to be prasadam distribution. This is actually our prasadam distribution. Prabhupada said, in fact, that At all of our temples there should be an arrangement. He sent a letter to every single temple in the world. In every temple there must be an arrangement for having prasadam, so that any respectable person can come at any time during the day and get full prasadam. And there should be no discussion about, yes, we'll cook something. That immediately they can sit down and take full prasadam. He gave some number, 6 or 8 people, something like that. And when that's finished up, you cook more, so that again, so every one of our temples, this should be there. He sent a notice to every temple. In fact, they should, well, it might take a little time to find. But, so interesting that it's worth finding. That's a good idea. You know the letter I mean, right?
What keywords did you suggest?
Well, temple, prasadam.
I'm pretty sure it mentions breeze and eggplant. You might
want to
try that.
You think so?
At least, yeah, all of them.
Here it is. No. No. Anyway, see what you can find. Prabhupada's at the end. Oh, I know. That was the Prabhupada basically said there should be no excuses. All of our temples, it should be that, you know, some respectable people can come and full prasadam should be ready for them. So that, you know, whether that instruction is being followed, but that was a notice to all the temples. That was Prabhupada, you know, we talk about how Prabhupada wanted prasadam distribution. This was there in black and white, all centers. Yes. Something else, you had a question?
Yeah.
You could still look. Oh, I see you're looking here. Yeah.
This word pretty.
Prabhupada
quite often use it actually, especially in the first part of the Bhagavad. But then also we heard like love is only mentioned for Krishna.
And devotees. Actually, this word priti, it's just like love in English, it actually means for Krishna. But it's used, you know, for everyone. So priti, same way, it's used for everyone, but it really means for Krishna. And in relationship with Krishna, Krishna's devotees. In fact, either in this purport or else someplace else, Prabhupada points out that these 6 exchanges can be performed between the devotee and Krishna. That Krishna, you give something to Krishna and you receive something from Krishna. You offer some food to Krishna and you accept prasadam from Krishna. You disclose your mind from Krishna and Krishna gives you, you know, piece of his mind. Krishna gives you some direction. So these are between devotee and devotee, and also between the devotees and the Lord. Something else. Okay. The couple of more points I wanted to make. We should not promote these exchanges with mayavadis. We should not disclose our minds to the serpent mayavadis and karmis. Such disclosures will never help. It's best never to ask them anything confidential because they can't give good advice. One should carefully avoid eating food offered by non-devotees. A devotee should be very strict in not accepting food from non-devotees, especially food prepared in restaurants or hotels or on airplanes. Madhyalila, chapter 12, text 195. Purport. Vishayir anna koile dushta hoyaman. By eating food prepared by worldly people, one's mind becomes wicked. Mano dushta hoile nohe krishner smaron. Krishna smriti vinu hoy nishpal jivan. When one's mind is polluted, it's very difficult to remember Krishna. And when remembrance of Lord Krishna is hampered, one's life is unproductive. Adi Lila. We should avoid. Not that because they give food on the airplane, we should eat it. The birds fly in the air and eat on the ground. And Prabhupada used to bring his own on the airplane and distribute also sometimes. Not that we have to accept simply because they're offering.
I'm not sure, but regarding this Mayavad topic, not associated with them, not having this exchange, I heard that Prabhupada had one friend actually who was a Mayavadi. And for sure, on the philosophical platform, there was no question about associating much.
Dr. Mishra.
Yeah, but on a personal level, he separated these levels, philosophical level and the personal level. On the personal level, they were friends. So how can we understand this?
Yes. Pure devotee, Prabhupada was not going to get affected by Dr. Mishra's association. Maybe Dr. Mishra got affected by Prabhupada's association. So Prabhupada, he could live with the Mayavadi. He was living in Dr. Mishra's ashram. But he never lost even a gram of Krishna consciousness. But if we live with Mayavadis, we should be careful.
I heard also the key to association is Vaishnava should always give association and never takes association. It means even if you go to at home and visiting our family or my wife.
Well, we try to give association when it comes to materialists and so on. It means, again, we were reading, it's not that we never see anyone. But we may not form these intimate friendships with materialists. These exchanges are meant for creating, you know, getting closer, creating close relationships. And we want that with devotees. We want more and more close relationship. But with the mayavadis, we don't. With the materialists, we don't. We have to be careful. But yes, we do something like we have a program and we distribute Krishna prasadam. It's not that we I was just at a program in Calcutta. And because the people were a little receptive to Krishna consciousness, so we came, we chanted, we spoke something, but we didn't accept the food that they offered. Because we know what they cook, you know, when we're not there. We know that they're not devotees. We know that on their altar you'll see Krishna and Shiva and this and this and this. So, you know, just the devotees were polite. They took a little fruit and, you know, kept it, or, you know, a little something and kept it. We'll take it with us. But they didn't sit there and take prasadam. They didn't accept food because they knew. But we distribute prasadam to them, and we, in other ways, look for opportunities to have some give and take. One should be very careful about eating. This is here very carefully noted Vishayir anna koile dushta hoiman. By eating food prepared for sense gratification, the mind becomes nasty. You know, through food, the consciousness is transferred. Yeah. Therefore, you know, you're creating loving relationships and you're affecting the person's mind. You know, the girl cooks for him, his mind is changed. He takes her to a restaurant, her mind is changed. We don't want our minds changed by the materialists. And even the food they cook, even if they have no particular purpose, you know, the flight attendant is just giving it to you because you're 41D and she just did 41, you know, 40D, you're next. You know, there's no particular motive there. But the food has been prepared without any devotion for Krishna. Simply as business. Some cook is getting money, so he's cooking. Some company is getting money, so they're arranging. But that food will change our consciousness. Therefore, we should be very careful not to accept this kind of food. You take Krishna prasadam. That will change your consciousness also. The materialists, if they take prasadam, their consciousness changes. And the devotees, if they take ordinary food prepared for sense enjoyment, their consciousness changes. You should be careful. Simple thing, just take Krishna prasadam. Okay, let's do some work. We have doubts, we have problems. What happens when we keep them to ourselves? Who's writing today? Who's writing? Okay. What develops when we keep our doubts and problems to ourselves? Yes?
Mental speculation.
Mental speculation. We just try and figure it out. Yes?
Increase.
Okay. More problems. More doubts. I've got a problem, a serious problem, a serious doubt. I'm keeping it to myself. I don't want to tell anyone.
Frustration.
Frustration? Yes?
It means we're holding something back, because the goal is to give everything to Krishna.
Yeah.
If we're holding back, we cannot give everything.
So what develops then?
unable to surrender everything.
Inability to surrender? What else? Yes?
Offenses.
How do offenses develop?
When you feel doubts.
Oh, I have doubts about you, and I'm not going to say anything, so I become offensive, okay? Anxiety. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? I can't tell anybody. What am I going to do? Okay, anxiety. Yes?
Oh, enthusiasm is always hold down.
Okay, lack of enthusiasm or waning of enthusiasm. What else?
Mm-hmm.
What's that?
You left.
Yeah. Flight. A person can leave. Looping. Yes.
Doubts.
More doubts. We've got that already. What else?
Remain stuck in our consciousness.
Yeah, stagnation, or is that good enough? Stagnation? Yes?
So also that there is example of people who kill themselves.
What? Suicide is a possible result?
Yeah.
Yes?
In the same way, people can become aggressive.
Aggressiveness? Yes? Okay, isolation. Opposite of deep relationships is isolation. What else?
Honesty.
Dishonesty. I can see this is a two-sheeter.
The heart can become hardened?
Hard-heartedness. Yes.
People will torture themselves physically.
What?
People will torture themselves physically.
Physical self-torture. Yeah, there are people who do that. They, you know.
Masochism.
Yeah, they, masochism. You know, I'm so bad that I should just be, you know, you name it, they'll do it. Self-torture sometimes results, yes? Yeah, intoxication as a solution. What else? Insincerity, yeah. You know, a whole double life can be there. You know, you're speaking one thing, but your life is a whole different thing.
Hopelessness.
Yes?
Our faith is getting weaker and weaker because we don't have enough faith to...
Loss of faith.
Others on the scriptures can solve our problem.
Yeah, my problem is insolvable. I'm hopeless, and there's, you know, chanting Hare Krishna doesn't work. Yes.
Madness
can develop, yes. Sharing the whole gamut here, yes.
Don't get visions like for the future or your plans for the future.
Your vision gets narrow and dull, okay? Yeah, your health can go down. People, you know, get ulcers and everything else. Huh? Insomnia, ulcers, headaches, strokes, heart attacks. Yeah, lust can flourish because you're not talking about it. It just kind of grows in the dark there. Yeah. Anything else that pops into mind here? Yes? Yeah, we talked about isolation. Yes?
Somewhere it was described like doubt, another seed, and sometimes it's growing more and more, then it's overshadowing the Bhakti Lata.
Yeah, that leads to blooping, which we already have there. Doubts increase, escalation essentially, your problems get worse. Yeah. Anything else we want to add?
Can we say Maya body is included in
Excuse me?
Can we say Maya body? He can become a Maya body.
Well, yeah, he could become a Maya body. He could become a, you know, a Christian fanatic. He could become a Muslim. He could be. I mean, there are all sorts of things you could become. Yeah, he could become a, you know, a thief, a rapist. You know, but you know what goes on. You know, more before it gets to that point.
Especially if you become like entrusted because you don't.
Well, there's two. We'll take the opportunity to point out that there's two uses of impersonal in the English language. One is Prabhupada's usage, meaning having a philosophy that the absolute truth is formless, and the other is just being cold toward people. Sometimes they're used interchangeably. Devotees tend to use them interchangeably, but it's not really so well justified. You know, that I'm cold toward people doesn't necessarily mean that I have an impersonal conception of God. It may just mean that, you know, my nature is to be a little frigid, or, you know, I don't have, wasn't endowed with lots of warmth, or maybe that I've got, you know, psychological problems. But I have deep conviction that Krishna is the personality of Godhead. So the two kinds of impersonalism should not be, you know, the psychological impersonalism and the philosophical impersonalism are really two different species with the same name. So we should draw a nice distinction there, I think. Let's see what else. Any other developments here?
You lose your family.
You lose your family, okay. I've got a few more.
Abuse
your family. Yeah, aggression. We talked about that. Fear of exposure. Concealment. you know, whole gets to be very elaborate sometimes, the things that you'll do so that no one will find out. Yes?
Loss of enthusiasm.
Loss of enthusiasm, I think we got that. Yes? Yes?
A lot of lies, more and more.
Yeah, you can get into lying, part of concealment.
Disease,
we got disease. Hit and miss attempts at resolving your problems. Well, let me try this, let me try that. Yep?
Taking shelter of
the yeah, you could take shelter of non-devotees. I need a professional to resolve my problems.
What if you do need a professional?
Consult with devotees about it. There are cases when professional help may be wanted. But there may be cases where, you know, really all he needs to do is loosen up and open up a little bit with his, you know, god brothers or peers, and instead is bottling it up, and then he needs professional help, or he needs to be institutionalized. How about loneliness? We talked about that. Maybe isolation, loneliness, feelings of being neglected and abandoned, nobody cares about me. The society doesn't care about anyone. They're all impersonal. Hypocrisy. Denial. I don't have that problem. Exposure. Your problem comes out and then you're humiliated and this and that. Instead of solving the problem, you conceal it, and then finally, as Mr. Bennett, my English teacher, said, it comes out in the wash. Bennett's law takes over. And you develop various compensatory strategies. That's a possible response. You become pseudo-righteous. Over-punctilious. You know you're the man for every rule and regulation. Well, meanwhile, you're doing something, you know, what's the word? Weird. Criticism of others. What do they say? You know, one finger's pointing out and three are pointing toward yourself. You know, but you feel better about yourself because you're finding the flaws in everyone else. And meanwhile, this thing that you're concealing is... Well, we got quite a 29. Anyone want to make it 30? Do I hear 30? Yes.
Can victimize yourself?
Yeah, you can beat up on yourself. You know, I'm not worth anything. You know, with humility is one thing, but it can lead to this kind of despair that Rupa Goswami says one shouldn't have, where you just go on and on. Oh, my life is worthless, and that can lead to suicide or blooping or lethargy or I don't know. Life is meaningless. Yes.
Indecision,
yeah. I don't know what to do, not to do. Okay. We got enough. We're at 31. I think we can stop. Oh, we're at 30. We can stop there. You're not over. It's not over. It's not over. We have more work for you, but it's over there. What happens when you disclose your mind to devotees? You get blasted, right?
Relief.
That's the first thing. You get some relief. Just from the fact that you disclosed it, you get some relief.
You get a solution.
You can get a solution. Have you tried X? Have you tried Y? Prabhupada said this. I used to have this problem and this is what I did for it. You get some good advice. Yes. You feel cared for.
Your
heart gets purified. You become hopeful. Confident. You feel encouraged. Encouragement. What else?
Your faith increases, actually.
Your faith increases. Enthusiasm increases. Yes.
Others recognize you as a simple person.
You've come up in the world. People thought that, you know, man, I thought he was going to just like, you know, try and shine this on forever. But, you know, I guess I was wrong. He's, you know, he's sincerely trying to deal with it. Your people's opinions of you suddenly rise.
Growing.
You grow. The buzzword is personal growth. Yes? How do you help others? Someplace down the line, now that you've dealt with your problem, you'll be in a good position to help others with their problem. Yeah. I used to have that problem, and here's how I solved it. Yeah.
Happiness.
You become happy the way you're supposed to be. Something else.
You
become what you're supposed to be, a nice exemplary devotee. Anything else that we get out of this? Yes?
When we can enlighten.
You get enlightenment? Yes?
Advancement of Krishna consciousness.
Your Krishna consciousness advances, certainly. Yes?
You got all this, like, strategies of disclosure, of pull it back, like,
you become simple again. Straightforward and simple. You develop friendship. You develop loving relationships. This person, you know, I've heard the question asked, you know, after somebody, suddenly some scandal is revealed, or somebody, you know, is, you're just seeing the dust of him trail, you know, going off into existence, or you're hearing that's the sound of bloop. From, you know, and people ask, you know, didn't he have any friends? You know, didn't he have any friends? And the answer was no, he didn't have any friends. But with this, you develop trust, friendship. I'll talk to such and such about it and see where that goes. You develop loving relationships. This person cares about me. Yes?
By discussing problems, you show your sincerity and honesty.
Yeah, your sincerity and honesty come to the fore. Something else?
Mm-hmm. More?
More?
More confused.
More what?
Confused.
Enthused.
Confused or feeling.
You can become more confused. Yeah, you approach the wrong person. And he can screw your head up, sure. Well, Prabhu, you're being too harsh with yourself, you know. I mean, four regulative, strict, you know, I mean, I follow the four regulative principles, but, you know, the strict four regulative principles, that's too much. I thought Prabhupada wanted, no, you know, I mean, no, none of us follow those rules. You know, if 16 rounds is too much for you, you know, hey, chant 4, that's what I do. I used to go to Mangalarti. I feel better, you know, getting 8 hours rest. Does more for my Krishna consciousness, I tell you, getting up at 4 in the morning, you know, I mean, that's just not like for human beings, you know what I mean? Maybe in India that works, but not here. New Jersey, you know. Yeah, you go to the wrong person, you get screwed up. Something else? Perhaps not quite so negative?
You get knowledge.
You get knowledge?
You can call. later.
Realization.
You get realization. Yes?
It clears the other people's impression about you.
Yeah, we talked about that. People get the, you know, you clear off what people thought about you because they were right, maybe, and now it's, you know, they were right. Yes?
Become
peaceful.
Become
peaceful. Peaceful, yes. You get relief, you become peaceful, yes?
And healthy.
Healthy, your health improves. You can think of Krishna again. Instead of all your anxieties, yes.
Are you responsible for your spiritual life?
Yeah, you develop a sense of responsibility that you can do something, that you're not just a victim.
No, you can redevelop your integrity and then you can really surrender everything.
You develop integrity and then you can surrender. Before you were a cheater. Now you've got some, you know, you really are what you pretend to be. Yes?
You will have more energy.
You'll have more energy, yes.
You develop teamwork.
Develop teamwork. Now you can deal with people. You know, that you get closeness.
Mm-hmm. Purification.
Purification, definitely. Oh, yes? You make Krishna happy, sure. Krishna doesn't want to see you in wretched, miserable despair. On a social level, you reduce conflicts, yes? And foster cooperation, yes? You know, on a mega level, not just the, you know, your own personal inside, internal, but with others. Now there's, you're not fighting with them and scared of them and anxiety about them. In conflict with them. Yes? Is there a question? Okay. Okay, there it is. On the one hand, no friends, no disclosure. And on the other side, friendship. Disclosing the mind, loving dealings. Okay, we're going to, like, you're not over yet. I have more work for you. What condition does revealing one's mind confidentially require? What conditions have to be there before one can disclose one's mind confidentially? Krishna Kripa. There has to be trust. You have to have a person you can trust.
Everyone got this?
Everyone got that? You all know about insincerity, concealment, stagnation, suicide, aggressiveness. You got all that down? Okay. You have to have a person you can trust. What does that mean?
You have to have faith.
You have to have faith, right. So what does that mean more?
Some history, some pre-existing relationship with the person.
Some pre-existing relationship, okay.
Respect,
yeah. You don't want to reveal your mind to a person you think is a bozo.
Confidentiality.
You have to have trust that your confidence will be respected. That after I reveal to you, Guja, my secrets, it's not going to be on the internet the next morning. Or on the temple president's desk, or in the ear of the person about whom I was revealing I had a problem, or what have you. I have to feel secure that my confidence will be respected. Even the United States legal system respects confidentiality. There's what they call a priest-penitent relationship. You know, they call me to testify, you know, did Mr. such and such reveal to you his plans regarding such and such? I'm sorry. Whatever he told me was in the context of a priest-penitent relationship. End of story. End of story. You're not required to testify. I'm sorry, Your Honor, I was acting as his attorney. End of story. If you can't tell your lawyer in confidence, then how will you get justice? You have to be able to tell your lawyer, yes, you know, it was my sister's Colt 45, and I just got angry at him and then shot him. And he can't tell the jury, well, you know, he just got it. No. He's your attorney. He's sworn to confidence. Your priest, your attorney. And your friends. If your friends don't respect your confidence, what kind of friends are they? And how long will they remain your friends? What happens when you violate someone's confidence? You lose their trust. I'll never tell him anything again. Unless I want it broadcast on the internet, I'll never tell him anything. You know, I told him, and the next thing I knew, you know, such and such knew about it. You lose trust in the person. What's it like in a society where you can't depend upon confidentiality to be honored? What's it like? Fun, right? Yeah, it's hellish. You can't tell anyone anything. You know, this was part of what was notorious about the former Soviet Union. You know, your kids could turn you in. Your husband, your wife, your brother, you know, they could all turn you in, inform on you. You couldn't tell anyone anything.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes you can see, like, especially in the position of the guru, for example, that for him it's sometimes really, really difficult to openly disclose himself, just the case that he would fail to follow the four regulated principles, which all was because there were so many reactions. So sometimes we see that the guru has heavy pressure on him, and cannot speak really about something.
And what happens?
Then the cooking boiling up, and then it
gets worse and worse. All, you know? All these things on the right can appear. It doesn't matter who you are, guru, sannyasi, temple president, pujari, sankirtan leader, oldest brahmachari in the temple, you know, whatever it is. Whatever it is. New bhakta, anyone. You can't disclose. There's no one you can trust, no one you can talk to. Then you have to keep it all within yourself and try and solve it. Maybe you do. Maybe you're good at it. Maybe, you know, you're very fortunate and you solve all your problems and they go away and you just carry on. You know, you read the books, you chant the mantra, and it works. Yeah. It's not that everything, that the only solution is that, you know, you have to go, I got a problem, Prabhu. I got another problem. I just thought of a third problem. It's not that the only thing to do with problems is talk about them. And by the way, it's not only problems. It may be ideas. I have an idea. You know, what do you think if we try this? We could preach this way. You know, because you don't want to put it all out there and have everybody laugh at it. But, you know, you want to test it with someone. What do you think about this? I was thinking we could do this, or I was thinking I could do this. It's not always negative. It could be very positive, what you disclose. Mm-hmm. But I got off. I was responding to something and I lost it. Anyway, anyone, if they can't disclose their problems, or their even if it's not a problem, their thoughts, their whatever, they may have difficulties along these lines. And if they can disclose, you know, sometimes the problem can be dealt with. It's not so bad. Something can be done about it. You know, just the fact that you've got association and you know. So yes, it's not that because I'm a big shot senior devotee, if I keep my problems to myself, that's the best course. And again, it's not that we're just a big psychotherapy society and that we spend, you know, our most important engagement is to sit around the temple all day and say, you know, well, you think you got a problem, let me tell you about my problems. It becomes self-indulgence, you know, we sit around and talk about our problems all day. But there are certainly occasions, which is why it's mentioned here, to reveal one's mind in confidence. Are there instances when you can violate confidence?
Yes, and then endanger somebody else.
Yeah. When there's grave danger, serious danger to someone else, you can violate confidence. When someone discloses to you that he's just planted a bomb in the Brahmachari ashram and it's going to go off in 20 minutes. When someone discloses to you that he's been abusing a child. When someone discloses to you that he's planning suicide. There are matters so serious that for the welfare of others or the welfare of the person, you may be obliged to violate confidence. That should be very seriously considered. Not that I just freely go, well, you know, it was bad for other people. You know, what he was doing was bad for other people, so I just had to publish it. But there are occasions when things are sufficiently grave, when danger to others is sufficiently grave, or danger to the person himself, that you have to violate confidence. Where it's ethically superior, ethically better to violate confidence. But that should not be common. Okay? You got the letter. Any question that doesn't take more than a minute? We'll read the letter first, then we'll see if there are any questions. This is to all ISKCON temple presidents. And it's dated 18 January 1977. Prabhupada's last year. To all ISKCON temple presidents, please accept my blessings. Now you must arrange in each temple there must be sufficient stock of prasadam for distribution. You can keep first-class cooks, two or three, and they should be always engaged. Whenever any guest comes, he must get prasad. This arrangement must be made, that the cooks prepare 10-20 servings at a time of puris and sabji, and you can add halava and pakoras. And the visitors must be supplied immediately. Whenever a gentleman comes, he must be served. As the 20 servings are being distributed, immediately the cooks prepare another 20 servings and store it. At the end of the day, if no one comes, our own men will take. So there's no loss. You cannot say it is finished. It is not cooked yet. There is no supply for cooking, etc. This must be enforced rigidly. The temple is managed by Srimati Radharani, Lakshmiji. So why should there be want? Our philosophy is, if anyone comes, let him take prasad, chant Hare Krishna, and be happy. Everything is being supplied by Krishna. Krishna is not poor, so why we should deny them? This should be done at any cost. There's no difficulty. It simply requires nice management. At the end of the day, you may sell or give away. If we believe that Krishna is providing and maintaining everyone, then why should we be misers? This means losing faith in Krishna and thinking that we are the doers and suppliers. We are confident Krishna will supply. Let the whole world come, we can feed them. So please do this nicely. Begin at once. Hoping this meets you all in good health, your ever well wisher, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Is this instruction being followed? At best, we're getting a shaky hand, maybe somewhat sometimes. No, it's not being followed. This should be rigidly enforced, and it should begin at once in 1977. Why? Bhunkte bhojayate chaiva, dadati pratigrinati. Prabhupada wanted people come to the temple, they must get a nut in your hand. A little, sweet. Puris, sabjis. And you can add halava and pakoras. That means full prasadam. Sit down, you must take prasadam. When you treat people this way, what happens?
Again?
They'll come back, yeah. Will they be your friends? Yeah. Will they think that Krishna is good? Yeah. Prabhupada wanted this. I've quoted many times that Prabhupada said prasadam distribution at our temples. And we're not doing it. We're not doing it. So some of you may be managers or you may become managers. Do something. Fix this.
What's the practicality of this many feet that come?
Give them prasadam. Do something, At the end of the day. They do this in Los Angeles. They have that wonderful restaurant and they get so many nice people who come. And at the end of the day, whatever's left, the smelly feet people or whoever it is. They don't waste. Whatever's there at the end of the day, they'll give. It's not that we're particularly interested in bombs. Yeah. But therefore Prabhupada said any gentleman comes. It's not that Prabhupada meant that we're supposed to be like a soup kitchen, like the Salvation Army, and all the drug addicts can come to our temple. But that anyone who comes, he's coming to Krishna for something in Krishna consciousness. Give them prasadam. Even Prabhupada wanted here, I've said so many times, this prasadam pavilion without discrimination. Anyone. Come and take prasadam. Prabhupada wanted that. He wanted it. That's temple. Temple means there must be prasadam. It's not that we're the Red Cross or the Salvation Army. But it means that where there's a temple and Srimati Radharani is in charge, there must be prasadam. Because we want to create these loving exchanges with the people who come to the temple. It's not that we want to go out and see that, the problems of the world, that school children get a good education so they can grow up and solve their economic problems. That's not ours. But we want to see that when people come to the temple, we reciprocate with them. We reciprocate with them. Yes.
Can we, he does use this phrase of gentleman or whatever. Can we understand that, the example you're saying, Tirupati, if kind of just people on the street come in, we can give them a small,
Let people, first of all, they're not coming. we're worried about who we're going to give to. Now we're not giving anything. we're such misers, we're not giving anything to anybody. Or we're out, feeding the world, and someone comes to our temple, what to speak of puris and halava and pakoras and sabji, they don't get anything. You know, maybe they get a piece of an apple or a little nuts and sugar.
Philosophy.
Huh?
Philosophy.
Best of all, they get philosophy. This is what people should get when they come to our temple. There must be full prasadam. How about that? So we should do this. And now we should go. Thank you very much.